Will you be my honey?
Fun, fun, fun.
I'm your little bee.
Fun, fun, fun.
Will you be my honey? I'll buzz, buzz, buzz till you belong to me.
Fun, fun, fun.
Why do bees like roses?
Fun, fun, fun.
It's so plain to see.
Fun, fun, fun.
You're sweeter than the roses. You're my honey, you're the one for me. Now the cows in the field go moo, 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 and the wise old owl says woo. Like a dove in a tree, I'll bill and coo, and I'll keep right after you.
Fun, fun, fun.
Will you be my honey?
Fun, fun, fun.
I'm your little bee.
Fun, fun, fun.
Will you be my honey? I'll buzz, buzz, buzz till you belong to me.
This is Mark Reeser. You are listening to CKMS Radio, 100.3 Sound FM. The Agricultural Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Federation represents the primary producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
Good afternoon. It's the Agriculture Show. You're listening to us at 100.3 Sound FM. I have a great show today. I have just the best guest you can imagine. We're so lucky. It's April the 10th, and this is episode 13. Hi, Krista. How are you?
Good. How are you?
If I was any better, it'd have to be two of me.
Twice as much work done. I think that'd be a good thing.
I spoke like a true farmer. You just want to get everything as much done, and there's still more to do at the end of the day.
That's right.
Well, Krista comes here with her training in architecture. We're going to talk all kinds of things about rural architecture. There's a mouthful. I should try it again
it
or speak more slowly, I guess. and we'll get into that. We're going to cover all kinds of topics, and I've got it all written down here, and hopefully we'll cover them and all kinds of other fun things. And also today with me is Scott Lissow. Hi, Scott.
Hello.
Glad you came out today and sitting in on our show. That's just great. So we'll start our show. I think what we can do is, now we found that song, you mentioned the Flying Buttresses.
Yeah, they're okay. A group of architecture students who decided they didn't want to be architects anymore.
Okay, and so this is from your alma mater at University of Waterloo?
Yes, it is.
Okay, well, we'll get into that. Let's play a song here by the Flying Buttresses first, and then we'll be right back. 100.3 Sound FM, CKMS Radio, your best community radio station. I'm your host, Jeff Steger, the Agriculture Show. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
17, and I know in retrospect exactly what it is that you mean. Oh, I wish that I had seen you in that dark black suit, tired and uncomfortable with all the other's eyes on you. Oh, no, and these days grow cold. And Kimmy Coke, you know that I can't do this anymore, yeah. These days draw nearer, even so I fear there is something missing here.
This is Murray's Inc. You're listening to the Agricultural Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
Hi, we're back. It's the Agricultural Show. Your host is Jeff Sager and Krista. But tell us a little bit about that band. They were some of your alumni when you were at university?
Yeah, they were a number of years older than me, and they went to the School of Architecture at Waterloo and started a band, and then decided that they really wanted to be a band and not architects anymore.
They became full-time?
They did.
They did?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, they're creative in a different way, aren't
That's
they?
Right.
And that was before the campus moved down to Cambridge, I guess, right?
Yes, yeah, it was.
Because it's only been down in Cambridge, what now, about 4 years, I'm going to guess?
Actually, it should be a few more than that, because I spent about 3 years there, and then I graduated 4 years ago. So we're getting to seven.
So tell us how you end up at architecture school at Cambridge. Tell us, our audience, what you're doing.
So I grew up on a dairy farm north of London. And
that's a good start.
Yeah, that's always a good start for for me. Always knew I wanted to be an architect, so I went to the School of Architecture in Waterloo. Spent 4 years doing my undergrad and had to do a master's thesis. And spending 4 years away from the farm, I must have missed it, because I decided that I wanted to design farms for my master's thesis. So I spent a year studying farm technology, farm architecture, and farm design, and designed a sustainable farm for my master's thesis.
And you have a good beginning of that, because you were born and raised on a farm, so you kind of had like a lot of legwork was done already.
Yeah, exactly. There was a lot of food theses coming out of the School of Architecture and food systems, and I thought that I could add a unique perspective to that discussion in actually approaching it from the farmer's side and less of from sort of the architect's side designing something. I felt I had some good knowledge and practical basis to my design work.
So you must be one of a very few people who've turned architecture into with an agricultural twist to it.
Yeah, absolutely. In my class of 60, there were only three people who had grown up in the farm, and everyone else was urban. So.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you certainly had some interesting conversations. You're talking about the theory of architecture and why you do things.
And
a very practical application. So, like, University of Guelph has landscape architecture program, which I'm just going to hazard a guess is somewhat close.
Yeah, it is close. It's much more landscape based. Yeah. And I'm not sure how much they delve into the agriculture world of things, but it's definitely related being from the University of Guelph. So.
Yeah. Well, that's the good news. Well, that's great. And you've got a nice catchy word to describe what you do. You're an agritect.
I am.
Tell us what that is.
So it's the combination of architect and agriculture. So it's the designer of agriculture buildings by an architect. So I've actually started my own office, Veld Architect, and basing it on that principle that I am an architect and I design agriculture.
So, and you have put together an office, and as most aspiring entrepreneurs, you're not only the chief architect, but the main phone answering person, and
that's right. I do everything.
That's good. And but of course, you know, you're much more involved in what's going on. It's not like the conversation is going to get lost between the front office and the back desk and
that's
that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's right.
So you've very kindly sent along some information previous to our show about some topics and so on, and we're going to save the best in my opinion for last, which is a little bit about old buildings, renovating, repurposing existing farm buildings and the like. And you also have some interesting stuff in here about some of the theory behind it. What's the hit your headline here? It says form follows function, and where does it come from?
Yeah, so...
Is that a good introduction? Can you work with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Le Corbusier, who is a very famous architect, and all architecture students study him. He's a modernist architect of the 21st century, and he worked mostly in Europe, but he coined a phrase that changed what modern architecture was, and that's form follows function, just what you said. And I find that saying being most aptly applied to agriculture buildings, because it's a very practical building, and the way it functions and the way it works for the farmer is the most important thing. And then the form of it follows that.
Mm-hmm.
And it develops a skin around the building and what it looks like. And I think that farmers can actually use this this saying even more to their advantage than they have been in a long time. I think that the architecture of their buildings can actually help them with their functioning as well.
Mm-hmm.
Going to the old bank barn, it's built in the hill to provide easy gravity access to multiple layers of the building. And perfect example that function is actually helping the form and vice versa.
And it's so true. I have an older barn on my property as well, and it's a bank barn, and you can get those put those wagon loads of hay up there quite handily.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. It made the life of the farmer easier at that time, and I think architecture can still do that for a farmer.
Well, that's good to hear. And of course, we'll get into the some of the more modern uses and readaptations of those buildings too. I would hope so. That's good. And tell us, let's not just talk about traditional agricultural stuff too. You also have an interest in that. Now, the word sustainability covers a wide grain, and
absolutely.
For purpose of our show here, as sponsored by the Federation of Agriculture, we call sustainability, can you make a living at it?
Yeah, absolutely.
But sustainability also encompasses things that people are concerned about, like, is this good for the biosphere? Is this preserving heritage species or heritage vegetables, that sort of thing? And you have an interest in that kind of thing, too.
Absolutely, yeah. And for me, sustainability should cover all of those things. Sustainable, you know, in the architectural world is often associated with reducing energy use, but it has to go beyond just that. It has to be economically sustainable. It has to help the community be sustainable. It has to cover all those aspects of sustainability. Energy is an easy one to sort of understand. You know, if we save energy in our buildings, then we're being sustainable and reducing our carbon footprint and those things. But if the farmer can't make a living doing that, then it's not sustainable, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I also have quite an interest in looking at the variety of agriculture technologies and how all of them can be sustainable and all of them can influence and help that farmer make a living, as well as help the rural communities make a living together.
Well, I really liked your summation of the agriculture in your document here. I think industrial farming, organic farming, sustainable agriculture. Do you want to incorporate the different definition of industrial farming and organic farming? I think they're really well spoken. Would you like to speak
absolutely.
To them?
Yeah, so during my thesis, I studied the whole range of agriculture technology, starting from very traditional methods all the way to very modern technologies. So each one gives us something that we can learn from and something we can incorporate into how we think about agriculture now. So for me, traditional agriculture teaches us about simple efficiencies, how to use the landscape, how to use the building to make farming more efficient.
Yeah, like the bank barn. And
exactly,
stuff.
Yeah. How to use native materials, you know, if you have rocks on your field, which many farmers do, you know, how do you use
those?
They just seem to grow everywhere. But traditional agriculture is about the simple efficiencies that I think we've forgotten a lot of them, but no farmer's going to give up their tractor. So it can't be the only method. So then, you know, you have industrial farming and modern technologies, and I think they give us ways to make our lives easier. They increase yields. They give us tractors. But sometimes I think that industrial farming is very closed off from the public. They don't necessarily relate or understand how the farmer uses all these technologies. And so I think it can have a lack of transparency that the public is really desiring right now to understand how the farmer grows their food. And then you have organic farming, which is actually, most people don't know, but organic farming is actually a shadow of a larger movement that involves sustainable and biomimicry agriculture.
Okay.
And organic has been reduced to a set of rules so that you can call yourself organic, which is great because it encouraged the farmers to take that step to move towards a different type of agriculture, incorporate some of the sustainable strategies that the larger movement was looking for. So then we have sustainable agriculture, which I think is quite interesting because it teaches us how to think about our whole farm as a system and how that system, all the little parts of it relate to each other. So whether it's the buffer strip between fields and how that encourages insects or animals and how those animals then help your fields grow. And then also how your own farm fits into an even larger system of a community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really great part of sustainable agriculture because it starts to look at being overall sustainable.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I know a friend of mine has is bee certified on her small farm. And so that there's some value in the pollinators. I believe in Europe, they actually promote each farm and give them a small stipend to maintain 3 or 4 acres of natural bee pollinating habitat.
Okay, yeah, no.
I think that would be, you know, that's a way for those farm owners to actually be able to
absolutely.
Do that with, I mean, it's the right thing to do, but you don't want to lose money doing it.
So. Absolutely.
So you kind of get that connection that maybe some of these things should be somehow monetized.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even in the UK, you know, most people imagine the landscape there as having all these fence rows of trees and bushes, and mm-hmm. they lost a lot of that going through their phase of industrial agriculture. So now the municipalities are actually paying farmers to bring those fence rows back, you know, cut their fields into smaller parts. Mm-hmm. And they're actually paying the farmers so that they can get an experience, a certain type of experience and picture back out of their landscape. And I think it's really helpful for the community and the farmer.
Well, we're covering a lot of stuff here. Before we get to the next break here, it just occurred to me that that there is this interesting class of farmer in North America, and they are neither organic or conventional, but they use the best of both. So okay. we have a farmer who said, I'm not organic, but he'll have a 6 or 7 year rotation and maybe only use pesticides half the time because Absolutely. Of the rotation.
Yeah, and that's definitely getting towards that whole idea of sustainable agriculture, not just organic. Yeah,
those guys are really elegant. I think they're cutting edge. They neither are just totally conventional or totally organic, because there's problems with both systems taken to the extreme.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
so that's good to hear. So, okay, well, tell us about your website, and then we'll play a song, and then we'll be right back.
So you can find my firm, Veld Architect, at www.veldarchitect.com. And I actually run a blog that you can access from there, or directly at theagritect.wordpress.com.
Perfect. Okay, let's play a tune. I've got one here by a friend of mine sent me. It's called Mad Cow by that band called Weezer. So I'm not too sure what we're going to get here, but here we go.
Thank you. This is Ruth Friendship Keller. You're listening to The Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture...
Hi, we're back. That was a previous guest, Ruth Friendship Keller, and she was from the food bank, and that was last week's show. Hi again. Hi, Krista. How are you doing?
Good.
Krista Schulhoff. Hulshoff. Oh, I hear that.
Those Dutch names, they get every time.
You're very gracious. Because obviously your hosts don't know what they're doing. Hi, Scott. Nice to see you come out today. Thanks for coming out.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right. So we're going to talk a little bit more about our favorite topic here, bank barns. And there are so many different ways to talk about bank barns. One of my favorites is the heritage and the tourism approach. But let's start. It is a shame to knock down old bank barns. Would we agree?
Absolutely. Okay. It is a shame.
And that's because not only are they decorative, but they can be repurposed as well?
Absolutely, yeah. You drive down the road and you look at a bank barn, and nobody, including myself, you know, a very practical farm girl, I'd like to think, nobody can resist the nostalgia and the emotion that those bank barns evoke in you. And so they have a lot of value heritage-wise because we look back, we remember the way we used to farm, and it's a very romantic and pastoral image of how we used to farm. And it's an important component that we should save. Just as we save important historic buildings in town, we should also be looking at how do we save important historic buildings in the country.
So, we talked briefly before, and do you recall that in the States and some other jurisdictions, they actually preserve these old barns?
Yeah, absolutely. Very similar programs to the cities. Many communities provide grant funds to farmers so to help them rehabilitate and renovate their old bank barns and keep them up because it can be quite burdensome if you don't have good uses right now in your current operation for them. But to just tear them down because they're a liability is a shame.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would miss that. If you're, you know, our audience here is urban. We're in Kitchener-Waterloo area, and this is the old university station, now is Sound FM Co-op, a community radio station. And I'm 99% sure that our listeners, a majority of our listeners here in the Kitchener-Waterloo area, would be disappointed to go in the countryside and see it without at least a few barns out there.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's not just about the bank barns. It's really about preserving our heritage rural landscape. You know, it's not just about one bank barn and what it does. It's about how it creates an image and a picture of what our rural landscape should be.
And they're wonderful spaces. And as you know, they've got a nice... The way the sound does not echo around, it's muffled. It's just a pleasant... typically, you know, the barn boards are long weathered, and it's this great shaft of light comes through the
boards.
Absolutely,
yeah, yeah. No, the one of the best things about them is those little cracks in the wood that just left light, dappled light into the barn, and you know, huge high ceilings, and you can just imagine the farmer having cut down a tree, cut out those big timbers that they make the barns out of, and you get a real sense of being and comfort when you walk into those spaces.
You've probably seen it too. Some of those barns have just this most amazing timbers, and then like over 100 feet long.
Absolutely.
12 inches square.
Absolutely.
Or larger.
Yeah, no, and it not only provides, it's not only very beautiful, but it's so over-designed structurally that it actually provides great benefit for when you're wanting to reuse them, because they're very large, they're oversized, and they create great structural forms that can last a long time.
It's quite amazing that they could build something over 100 years ago and it still works today.
Absolutely.
How many gizmos do you know that?
They just don't make them like they used to, do they?
To be fair, they could over-engineer in hindsight, only because it was just took too much time and effort to trim planks and boards to modern standards. Just simply take the sides off a big old log.
Absolutely.
And you had to clear the land anyway, so
exactly.
Just load this thing up and make it monsters, and here they still are.
Absolutely, yeah.
Standing the stresses of time.
Yeah, best they can. Although we've had some good blasts of wind and tough weather lately, that once in a while you see a plank or two go flying through the.
Yeah.
Did you guys see that on TV when those that tornado went through Texas and it blew those tractor trailers through the air?
Oh, I missed that.
You saw that, Scott?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. just goes to show how powerful that wind is like that.
It can be, yeah, absolutely.
So we're going to save these old bank barns. That's good. We voted for that already, I see.
Yes, yes. That's a good start.
And maybe we could talk a little bit how you do that if you're an architect. We can talk about, there's two aspects to that, of course. One is actually repurpose it so that you can actually farm with it. And we'll get into later on a little bit more about agritourism, how that can be reused. But any thoughts there, Krista, about how an old bank barn can be used in an existing farmstead?
Yeah, usually the argument from most farmers is that it's cheaper to build new or there's not enough light and ventilation in the barn.
Yeah.
And that tends to come from the builders who always build a barn a certain way, and they're not used to thinking about things differently. So there's a few techniques that you can look at doing if you're going to reuse your bank barn on your site. You know, for a dairy farmer, it's a great spot to put your calves and your heifers. For a poultry farm, you know, you can put some of your baby chicks, incubate in the basement level. There's some great opportunities for some warmth and insulation.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of technologies that can be applied to these old bank barns. Recently speaking with a professor from the University of Guelph, and he's actually working on researching ventilation systems that don't require big expanses of curtain wall, and actually okay. is a filtering system to take the air. In particular, it's great for enclosed bank barn spaces. Take that air, filter it out, refresh it, add a bit of fresh outdoor air, reheat it, use a heat exchanger, and put it back in the barn so that you don't get the stuffiness and the some of the usual complaints, the mustiness of a bank barn. And so there's technologies out there if you're willing to invest in it, and if you think that it's something important to you, it's something to look for and be creative with on how you can reuse the bank barn.
There's quite a cost in maintaining an old bank barn.
Absolutely, yeah, there sure is. Yeah. And if you're just going to preserve it on your farm for the sake of looks, it gets very expensive. But if you're willing to preserve it with purpose, then there's some economic benefit to you. And if you can find a use that you think can work in your bank barn, working with someone creative like an architect or an engineer, or even going to the professors at the University of Guelph, somebody will have something that they can help you with to make your barn useful again.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good that, I mean, thankfully people are looking into that option where you can reuse these buildings rather than just knock it down I was reading somewhere that if you take down an old barn, you have to dispose of that stuff. So there's yet again a load on the environment to move that stuff away and then to bring the new stuff in. So the more you can reuse on a site is actually less of a... Well, what would be the best term? I'm going to call it loading the environment, but that's a
We like to call, I guess, carbon footprint would be a common term that you would do. Mm-hmm. Or embodied energy is another term where a material, although it's, you know, it might be from a tree and doesn't take a lot of energy to grow a tree, but it might take a lot of energy to process that tree into some lumber, whereas if you reuse a piece of lumber that's already been involved with the building, you've just doubled its amount of use for the amount of energy that was put in to make that beam.
Yeah, so it's a double win, isn't it, if you can reuse that stuff?
It is, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good to hear. And we can also talk a little bit about agritourism a bit. Maybe we want to wait a little bit later. We don't want to miss everything we've talked about with repurposing buildings. We talked about the... from a tourism point of view, also from an actual repurposing on an existing farm to reuse that building, a little bit about airflow. And reminds me of those older barns where they used to have the ventilation channel that went up the center of them.
Oh, yeah, a chimney-like feature. Yeah, yeah. No, there's lots of creative ways to work with a building if you think it's valuable to you, right? Mm-hmm. If you're willing to invest the time and the creativity to save your barn, it's great. I think one issue we have to be careful with when you talk about grant programs and that kind of thing, and it happens in the city as well, when you apply to the city to get funding for preservation, they often put stipulations on that preservation and that preservation must be historically accurate, and you have to be very particular about how you change the building. And I think sometimes we get caught trying to preserve history more than actually integrate it into what we do now.
Yeah.
And there's a difference, and it's an important difference to look at are we really just trying to preserve it, or are we trying to preserve it and make it useful again? Because preservation for the sake of preservation is not an effective tool to make people want to preserve it.
Yeah, okay, got it. Yeah, I get it.
Farming is still a business, and there is the financial aspect.
Exactly, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you do not want to lose control of an asset if you want to change it.
Absolutely, yeah. And it happens in the city all the time with an old factory, and the city says, yeah, you can renovate it, but it must be like this.
And limit your options.
Exactly. And often costs more money, because often the preservation and the renovation of it requires it to be authentically true, and that authentically true can often cost you more than just tearing it down, and that's a shame, because that's could happen. You could
and
lead
not
to
all,
that.
Not always possible when you're trying to repurpose a building.
Exactly.
Sometimes things have to be changed.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, and that's a nice subtlety. I'm glad you mentioned that, because for most of us, it would be a simple either or, a very polarization, but there should be some leeway both ways.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I get that. Good point. And it doesn't matter how far do you go but retain parts of it.
Yeah.
You know, downtown Cambridge, I love it down there, but that new mill went up and they did the old factory, but they didn't try to rebuild the factory. They just repointed the existing, what was left of some of the stonework.
Yeah, yeah,
you
exactly.
Get it. This is where the mill race was. And
yeah, absolutely, yeah. And they did quite a good job, and I believe they actually received funding for that project, which made it possible. If they didn't get government funding for that project, it would have never happened the way it did, and it happened very well. It's a successful project, that's for sure.
Yeah, on my own farm, I have a historic building, and we paid for half of the renovations, and the taxpayer did the other half. Thank you very much, taxpayer. the caveat was we had to leave the existing openings as they were, so we couldn't knock the end of the building out, put a garage door in there for combines or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And also it had to be done with the cedar shake roof and some copper flashing.
Okay.
It's an old cheese factory. I think it's, we're going to talk about 20 by 40 or something like that, that building.
Okay,
so,
neat.
The good news was it didn't infringe on, and we actually did repurpose it. There's some, a seed company use it now for some of their storing of their research materials and so on.
Okay, yeah, that's a great example.
Yeah. So once in a while, it works.
Yeah, no, I'd love to come see it, actually.
It is part of the heritage tour, is it not?
Yeah, that's right, Scott. Thanks for mentioning that. So that the thing doors open?
Yeah.
They come to the farm and a neighboring facility about a mile away, which is the old Mennonite church there. They call it the Detweiler meeting house.
Yes.
Doors Open is a great initiative to get into some of these historic buildings, and it's great to see the bank barns on the list and some of the old sort of rural buildings on that tour, because it's very uncommon. And I know also in the States where some of these grant programs are, they then, after the grant programs have been rolled out, they often make tours so that people can actually go and enjoy where the money's been spent and that landscape that you created.
So we talked a bit about the old bank barns and so on, but it's also true in modern farms, there's new buildings. So what kind of design things can an architect do with a relatively new commercial facility that facilitates, in harmony with nature? A north-south orientation, the prevailing winds, what kind of things would you as an architect look for in a modern farm building that's, harmonious to
Yeah, absolutely. Those are great, great starting points. I think as an architect, you always start, where's the building going to go on the site? It's the most important question, right? And north-south, long direction north-south, and so that you can take advantage of the long facades on the east and west, and that's the natural ventilation.
Mm-hmm.
It also reduces the amount of sun beating down on a long wall. That increases your heat gain in the summer, which is the last thing you want in a barn. You want to keep your animals cool. working with your topography, if you're a hilly site, instead of clearing the top of a hill, how do you work with it and maybe actually bury some of that barn in the hill, because that actually gives you free cooling, because the earth is at a constant temperature. And, then looking at your whole farm and sort of where does the barn fit relative to the house and the other barns, and can you create a farmyard feeling? And, as a farmer, you're proud of the land you live on, and so you want to make sure you put your barn so that you you don't block the view of your land that you so graciously look after.
Mm-hmm.
So those are always important site questions. And then just looking at the barn architecture itself, You know, you want to make sure that the building is warm, that you create detail, that it's not one very big, long steel facade that is relentless.
Do you think we should get the graffiti artist in and decorate your body?
That's a thought. But one of the things, you know, going from bank barns to the steel barns, people, there's a warmness and texture to a bank barn facade. It has, yeah.
You think about the stonework?
Yeah, the stonework, yeah. And the wood, they're warm materials, but they have texture and they have detail. And those things, no matter where you're designing architecture, are important things to think about is how can you make your big wall warm? How can you make it, mm-hmm. you know, transparent? You know, maybe there's a way that you can create a view into the barn at some point so that people can actually see what's going on in your farm. You know, I love the new dairy barns that are all open on the side. You know, they're beautiful lanterns at night when the lights are on, and in the day they're open and you can see the cows moving around. And I think those are actually really great starts to how modern agriculture architecture can be more integrated with the landscape.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Like some of the new dairy barns there, the front of the building, which houses the milking part and the also the milk storage and the cleaning. Mm-hmm. Some of them are, you know, wide span, but there's lots of nice light windows up around the top, almost like it's a chalet or something.
Yeah.
What is that style? You know, when they put it in the end gable of a wall, and mm-hmm. it's not just a closed gable, but it actually has light windows of different style.
Often the high windows, we often call us clear story windows, mm-hmm. For the high windows, and you can do them on the end gables, but you can also do them along the length of barns, basically by changing the height of roof so that one side of the roof is a little bit higher than the other side, and then you can have a whole row of clear story windows in your whole building, and you can actually increase the daylight, and it's particularly useful in barns like chicken barns and pig barns where it's all electric light, because you don't have the luxury of opening the sides up and creating a really open barn.
Yeah. So good architectural principles exist across many building periods.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's good to hear. So, well, folks, we're just zooming right along here. My goodness, I'm having too much fun. It's 3 o'clock already, so we're about halfway through our show. Why don't we play in a couple songs here, or at least one song, and we'll be back and. This is your host, Jeff Steger. It's the Agriculture Show at 100.3 Sound FM. And this is CKMS Radio, your community radio station. And we'll play a tune and see you shortly. One moment.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight. Beans. Cornbread said, "Now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night. I'll be ready tomorrow night. That's what Beans said to cornbread. Beans told cornbread, "You ain't straight. Beans. You better wake up or I'll gas you gate. Beans. Been in this pot since 2:30. Beans. Swelling and puffing and almost due. I'll be ready tomorrow night. Beans. That's what Beans told cornbread. Beans. You're always getting mad at me. Beans. I ain't mad at you. Cornbread. I'll be ready tomorrow night. Beans. I'll be ready. Grab cornbread by the toe. Beans. Beans said, "Cornbread, let me go." Beans. Cornbread said, "I'll lay you low. Beans. I'm gonna fight you so and so. Meet me on the corner. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night." That's what Beans said, "Cornbread. You're so bad. You always wanna fight. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night. And I'm gonna beat the devil out of you. Woo! On the corner tomorrow night." Beans hit cornbread on the head. Cornbread said, "I'm almost dead." Beans, Beans told cornbread, "Get up, man. Beans. You know that we go hand in hand. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread, hand in hand. Beans. That's what Beans said to cornbread. We should stick together, Beans, hand in hand. We should hang out together like wieners and sauerkraut. We should stick together like hot dogs and mustard. We should get up every morning and hang out together like sisters and brothers.
Yeah.
Every Saturday night, we should hang out like chitlins and potato salad.
Yeah.
Like strawberry and shortcake.
Yeah.
Like corned beef and cabbage.
Yeah. difference what I think about you. Hey! We should hang out together like hotcakes and molasses. Hey! That's what beans say to cornbread. Cause beans and cornbread, they go hand in hand.
Hi, this is Elise Barber. You are listening to The Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture.
Hi, it is The Agriculture Show. It's Tuesday, April the 10th, and we're here with a great guest, Krista Schulhoff.
Holshoff.
And Scott Lissel. Thanks for coming again, Scott. So we're going to talk about our next bit of our show. We're in the third segment here, and let's talk about agritourism and how that's all done and what kind of issues we got going with agritourism. In a nutshell, we talked about before, as the fortunes of agriculture come and go with the price of commodities, which are set by the world stage, it was suggested that farms ought to be diversify and use
absolutely
their buildings, and agritourism was mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, boy, where do we start? We're talking about local food. We're talking about
agritourism, wineries,
entertainment.
Yeah. So there's lots of agritourism. It's usually focused around food, obviously, because that's what happens on a farm. Whether it's you have an on-farm market or whether you produce cheese, or you have value-added products, or you have a unique farm, you would like to give tours of your farm because it does things special, or there's lots of options for what agritourism can be, and it's really what's unique about your farm and your agribusiness, and how can you share that with the community and your customers.
So, the closer you are to the big city, the better.
Absolutely.
And there's some great, Scott and I, we have a neighbor and does a haunted house and pumpkin patch thing in the fall.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
And I think up there they're also doing in the spring, they have a greenhouse as well. Snyder Family Farms. So there's some successful interpretations and
absolutely
applications of it, but it's not an easy battle. And
no.
So what can go wrong?
Well, there's a number of things. First, the farmer has to be willing to have the public, sometimes the ignorant public, come to the farm, and they don't realize everything that goes on there, and some of the unique smells of the farm, and some of these things. So that's always a battle dealing directly with your customers. One of the battles that sort of I'm involved with and I'm encountering more and more often is actually issues of building code, mm-hmm, and municipality permissions and regulations when constructing and renovating barns and buildings for agritourism.
Our local Federation of Agriculture had that as part of our discussion just last Thursday night, a week ago, no, 4 days ago now, and there are some, there was the poster case for it is two or three landowners basically in the local township and who have renovated their barns, repurposed them from farms to meeting places.
Okay.
And then so difficult for them. They just, farm buildings are in that kind of in-between area, right? From an architect's point, they're actually not allowed for public.
Exactly, yeah. So there's two kind of codes that govern buildings. One is the agricultural code, and that governs all the sort of low occupancy buildings that are designed to hold your animals and maybe one or two people. And then there's Ontario Building Code, which mm-hmm governs all other buildings that are occupied by the public, and sometimes large numbers of the public. And it's designed, both are designed to protect the people and the animals that are in the building, but the standards of the two are quite different, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, like there's no malicious intent here as much as just that the laws have not caught up with a new opportunity or reality.
Absolutely. So yeah, one of the big problems with the bank barn renovation is that originally it's designed for animal occupancy, and so it's governed by the agriculture code, and then it's built, so that allows it certain things. It can be built out of wood, it doesn't need a sprinkler system, it doesn't need a fire alarm, it doesn't need bathrooms, there's lots of things that go along with a farm building. And as soon as you change that occupancy from animals and farm and move it to, say, a meeting space like you're speaking to, it now falls into a different set of standards in the Ontario Building Code that start to require a sprinkler system and a fire alarm and mm-hmm. washrooms and, you know, could be even an elevator, depending on the situation.
Handicapped accessible.
Exactly, yeah. And all these issues come into play because you change the occupancy, and now that building has to be designed to protect whoever's in it, which is now people.
Mm-hmm. And existing, so these barns have been repurposed to meeting halls. So, well, you know, there are existing meeting areas in those municipalities, and they very, very correctly point out that we have all the code plus pay the appropriate taxes to rent this space out.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's I get
zoning issues.
Yeah, you know, it's the same old thing in town when, you know, you have a whole bunch of nice restaurants downtown and the guy comes along with his hot dog cart and sells hot dogs.
Yeah, a little bit.
Because, you know, the restaurant worker says, hey, what the heck, I've got $1,000 invested here and this guy can take my customer and he just got a bicycle.
Yeah, and a farmer can definitely feel like that, you know, that he can just come in and do this. And you know, often a farmer when doing these renovations is really going to feel that they're being, you know, oppressed and bullied and you know, you're going to put me out of business and these regulations are too much working. And it's true. It's definitely a gray area between the agriculture and the building code. But again, the building code is designed to protect the safety of the public, which mm-hmm. is really important. And, you know, we've developed that over many, many years, that safety code, so that people are safe in buildings.
And, you know, once you do get these buildings renovated, there's also the issue of, in fact, what kind of assessment it is. Is it still a farm assessment, which is a lower tax rate than a commercial assessment?
Yeah.
And so I'm not too sure what exactly the little bit of limited experience we have in our area, which is probably as good as any, is that it's sort of a hybrid. The farm agritourism at parts of their structures will be assessed at a commercial rate.
Okay.
But it's not cut and dried all the time which buildings would be.
No, it isn't. You know, and you know, you say you have a barn with animals in it and you bring people into sort of a front store area.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's even more gray on, is this an agriculture building or is it a
commercial
store?
Commercial retail.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And yet the municipalities are really encouraging agritourism and encouraging the farmers to diversify their economic basis in the communities and actually generate more tourism and more finances for them. So they're going to have to step up and encourage it both in their what they say and how they regulate it.
It's quite an investment for the farmer to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Yeah. So the good ideas are all there. It's just the implementation is taking a while to catch up.
That's usually how it goes. you get the big idea and you figure out how to do it later.
Yeah, how to finance it later.
on a slightly oblique tangent, there's renewable energies, and like a lot of people can repurpose old buildings to put some solar cells up there. But mm-hmm. I suspect you'd want to have an engineer.
Yeah, that would be a good one to get an engineer for those, and the engineer can help you with those renovations. And part of the component of dealing with code issues and municipality issues is sometimes if you have an architect on your side, they know how to interpret the code and interpret the building code to your advantage that you can avoid some of the more costly implementations of that code. Say, you know, if you have less people in it, you don't have to put a sprinkler system in. Or so hiring a professional to help you through some of those hurdles could save you more money than you ever pay them in fees, which I think is something that a lot of farmers and people who are looking at agritourism could really benefit from, helping them get through these hurdles. And they know how to talk the inspector's language.
This is good. Have an interpreter. Again.
Exactly.
And end of the day, we mentioned it at the start of this segment, the actual experience for the person visiting needs to be, as you say, a high quality experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we mentioned about, you know, that the you talk about odors and stuff, but the whole point of agritourism is that people come to, and they want to come back because they've felt they've gotten good value for their time and money,
exactly.
Whatever that may be.
Yeah.
And but you want to remain true to the fact that it's a farm and agriculture
absolutely.
At the same time.
Yeah, it's a delicate balance, definitely, because, you know, you work on, as a farmer, you work on that farm every day, and you put your heart and soul in it, and someone comes to your farm, but they want an experience of what you do every day. So mm-hmm. It's important to give them that experience, but it's also important, you know, there are certain expectations that they have, some good, some bad, but, you know, there's a balance between meeting some of those expectations, but then giving them a real authentic experience that they're willing to come back for over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's good stuff. Wow, we're just zooming right along here. Let's take a little break and play another song. Tell us again your website and so on.
It's www.veldarchitect.com. Or you can go to my blog at theagritect.wordpress.com.
Good stuff. You guys just get there right as, even as we're saying it, just type that into your Google and you'll be in business. You can just listen right along. It's the Agriculture 101.3 Community Radio, CKMS. We'll be back shortly.
You come and say a howdy, shoe fly pie, an apple pan dowdy. I'll never get enough of that wonderful stuff. Shoe fly pie, an apple pan dowdy makes the sun come out when heavens are cloudy. Shoe fly pie, an apple pan dowdy. I'll never get enough of that wonderful stuff. Mama, when you bake, Mama, I don't want cake. Mama, for my sake, I'm going to the oven to make some ever-loving shoe fly pie. An apple pan dowdy makes your eyes light up. You'll come and say a howdy, shoe fly pie. An apple pan dowdy, I'll never get enough of that wonderful stuff.
Hi, this is Angie Koch. You are listening to CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
Hi, we're back. It's the Agriculture Show, 100.3 CKMS Radio, and the lovely April the 10th on a Tuesday afternoon. My lovely guest is Krista Hulshoff.
There you go.
And with us today is also Scott Lisso, sitting in the chair there and helping us feel right at home. It's good. Thanks for coming out, Scott.
You're welcome, Jeff.
Great.
Thanks.
So we're in the last bit of our show. We're going to wrap up, and I know you had a topic there, and maybe we could start there because we'll just basically go over all the other stuff. But tell us a little bit more about what you just had said there.
Yeah, so like I said, I've recently started my own office, Veld Architect, and lots of people don't really necessarily know what architects do, so I thought I'd talk a little bit about that.
Perfect.
Yeah, so most people, when they call up the architect, they ask, so do you do drawings? And absolutely, we do drawings. That's a no-brainer. That's what we spend our life doing. But most people, what they don't realize is that for every drawing, there are thousands and thousands of lines that go onto that drawing. And every one of those lines is a decision about what your wall is made out of, a decision about where your building goes, a decision about what flooring you're going to put down. And all those decisions have to be made. And as an architect, we want to help facilitate those decision-making for you. Mm-hmm. We want to work with you to make those decisions, and we want to help you make the best decisions for you and your farm or your house. And architects are trained to be big picture thinkers. So not only do we help you decide what color floor you want, but how that flooring might affect other parts of your business. Is it, you know, durable enough to last? Is it you know, is it going to match? Is it going to, these kinds of issues. And so we want to be, we're big picture thinkers and problem solvers. And yeah, we want to help you make sure that every decision you make about your farm or your building is a good one for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, you can't get enough. Well, it's important to get as much as you can beforehand before you're doing the bricks and mortar.
Absolutely.
And actually get stuff done.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And you know, it just, you need help to the more advice you can get to a point is how, what your vision is going to look like, and the implications is just
so important. It's good to have a plan before you start digging in the ground.
Oh, heck, well, just start digging. Famous last words.
Yeah, that's right.
Whether you're the digging, putting in a tree or sailing the Titanic, I guess.
That's right.
100th anniversary of the Titanic sinking this week, I believe.
That's
so,
right.
You do the best you can, and this is one way to do it, is to get an architect in, and especially Krista is agricultural architecture.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So we did cover a lot of stuff today. You know, we started out a little bit about your beginnings there on the London, Ontario dairy farm, and
yeah,
here we are today, and then we talked a little bit about our old bank barns. And I guess we talked about something else before that, didn't we? We're not trying
to...
Yeah,
we were talking about form follows function, and
right,
how agriculture architecture should fit into the landscape. And, you know, just to add to that, I'd like to say that every farmer is an architect because they design what the rural landscape looks like. And so before you build your next barn, think about, is that really the legacy of a rural landscape you want to leave for your community?
Well, and as you
said, so big power you have.
Well, like you said too, you know what, the new buildings need to respect the east-west orientations, and that's typically what the existing farm building did show. You know,
absolutely.
You put the house up against the rigid trees, keep that blast of winter from
exactly
the north side, stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Good design requirements for whether you're new or old on farms.
Exactly.
And then we talked a little bit about the background of all agriculture in Ontario, and as it's going from production and even more into industrial type of farming, but also the emergence of organic and local type farming ideas there. Sustainable agriculture covers a wide range.
It does.
For our federation, that means can you make a living, and you added to that some other things too, harmonious with nature.
Yeah.
Do you have any other thoughts on what sustainable agriculture is?
Yeah, I think probably one of the key ones is for me is how can your rural landscape community be sustainable as well, and how can a rural community work together and be sustainable over a long period of time. I think that's an important one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we have lots of nice new people moving to the countryside.
Yes, that's good.
You know, it's one of the luxuries or one of the ideas that to live out in the country and go to town for all your stuff, and there's people doing that, and that's okay too, and they make good neighbors. So and also we talked at the last there a little bit more about, well, here's an interesting little part here. I don't want to forget this. You mentioned about the farmer's share of the food dollar. How did that end up on your stuff? I mean, it's a good point. And
yeah,
numerous studies on that.
Yeah, it's true. So during my research thesis, again, looking at economic sustainability, the farmer's share of the food dollar has been declining over the past 50 years. And so agritourism, I feel, is a way that the farmer can start to get some of that money back because they're selling directly to the consumer now when they skip the middleman.
Yeah, and that led into our discussion about repurposing and agritourism,
exactly,
right?
Yeah,
so that's
exactly.
That's added to that whole point. I get it, yeah. And then of course we ended up with a little bit more about, I got into the meat of our topic, which is about the value of old bank barns and how do we kind of monetize that value? What is the value of those old buildings? Certainly we can repurpose them to a point, but do they not have value just on their own?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think they do.
I'm just waiting for the day, you know, when some biologist says, and I know it's partly true when it comes to barn swallows, is this right. Is its habitat. By knocking down old farm buildings, have you just reduced habitat?
You're right. That's very true. I'm not sure you want to go there, though. The regulations there are even worse than the building code.
But it's funny how some topics have a connection. They don't exist on their own.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm sure, you know, old farm buildings, and I know that I have to fight them all the time, but I don't think anybody too heartbroken if the coons had no place to live.
That's right.
Those guys can take over your building in no time.
That's right.
So there's a good use for old farm buildings, tourism aesthetics, repurposing, and it's great that you know you have the training experience and interest in that mm-hmm. type of thing.
Yeah.
And encourage our listeners to investigate all those great things you're doing, and you'll be on. Your show will be archived, and hopefully I'll be able to put this document on there, too.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
Yes, and our listeners can tune in and get clued in. Tuned in and clued in.
That's great. For all the stuff we missed, they can check out themselves.
Well, we did try to cover a lot, and I know in between when last song was playing, the three of us were talking about how there's so much material, how would you get it all justice?
So that's right.
We'll look forward to a return visit perhaps in the future, and we'll get some of these things ironed out. Maybe there'd be an interesting issue come along that just suits
yeah, absolutely. Real well. So
what's on the rest of your day's activities? Back to the office?
Back to the office, and I'm doing some site planning as we speak on a horse farm. So.
Oh, boy. Yeah, the horse farm business now, they're members of our Federation of Agriculture, and they're facing tougher times with the proposed provincial legislation to not share the earnings from the racetracks.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of our members of the Federation are horse owners horse farm owners.
Yeah, it's a big agritourism industry. I once heard quote that a good healthy agritourism or equine tourism in mm-hmm. your community is like having a factory in your community.
Yeah, which it's just spread out like that.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, it's a whole industry that generates financial benefits for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't think of it, but it's true. There's a lot of horse farms, even in our area now, in the Kitchener-Waterloo area, where this station is broadcasting from. But,
absolutely. Yep.
Certainly closer to Toronto, there's a lot more too.
That's right.
Yeah. So I think we've about done our show here, folks. About 3:30 in the afternoon, and our next DJ is here, ready to get started. And I think we'll call it an afternoon. Once again, Krista, thanks for coming out today.
Thanks for having me.
And Scott, thanks for coming out today.
You're welcome.
And this is your host, Jeff Steger, and this has been episode 13. Thanks so much for listening in, folks. And we're going to play out with another song by the Flying Buttresses.
Sounds good.
And this is called Afternoon of July 17th. Do you recognize that?
I wasn't there.
Okay, folks, we'll see you next week. Bye for now. Short and gay.